Education Research. This is episode 88 and explores chapter 1 of Daniel Memmott's book, Teaching Tactical Creativity in Sport, Research and Practice. This week I'm delighted to welcome Nathan Horn as the practitioner responder. Nathan has recorded his own response, so the voice you will hear is his. I thank him for his considered words and for taking the time to respond. Creating creativity-supporting environments. Creativity is a basic human attribute that has become lost in the imposed rigour and routine of sport and physical education. The very notion of creativity is one associated with uniqueness, originality, and/or intuition. It is about finding the new, the never-before-considered, the out-of-the-box, the idea that comes from left field. It isn't about the mundane, the predictable, the steady or the surefire. And yet in the use of drills and practices and runouts, haven't we opted for the safe over the creative? Bizarre ideas or the unusual behaviours of people are not celebrated in sport until they attach to the very best of players. The little general, the maestro, etc. Doing things no one else can do, or had even thought of doing, is the hallmark of the mega-talented. And yet do we create environments that invite and allow young people to be the maverick and push the limits of what can be done? In short, do we provide learning environments that are supportive of creativity? The best of the best have an air of uniqueness and seem to live in the upper echelons of spontaneity. That is not to say they are not rehearsed, and that they don't understand the nuances of the game to the nth degree. What it does mean, however, is that by making creative tactical decisions, they can set up and even finish opportunities that are created by imagination and not just analytical and rational thought. In life, as in games, we are often confronted with new situations for which we do not have learned or prepared solutions. And yet we have to find creative resolutions to these problems. Such creativity is a central facet of life, and yet is it a central facet of physical education or sport? Memmott, in his opening chapter, argues that while creativity research has been approached from multiple domains, such as science, literature, music, art, religion and politics, it hasn't prospered in sport and physical education. Defined by Steinberg and Lambert as the ability to produce work that is both novel, i.e. original, unexpected, and appropriate, i.e. useful, creativity shouldn't be mistaken with intelligence. Instead, creativity stands for productive, original, shaping, artistic, artful, inventive, innovative, imaginative, enterprising, fanciful, groundbreaking, or trend-setting solutions. These are certainly terms that we might associate with the best of the best. But are these the ways we think about grassroots sport or classroom physical education? The big question that sprung to mind for me in reading this chapter was, if we value creativity so highly in our best players, why don't we create opportunities for the young people in our care to be creative? I then wondered if we, collectively, think that these are naturally occurring or God-given attributes that cannot be taught. Are we too focused on the basics to realise that this is one of the basics of good play and good players? Using the European Union as an example, Memmott argues that 25 to 30% of the 6.5 million people who work in EU countries are employed in the creative sector, i.e. in advertising, design, music, film, fashion or media. Furthermore, the creativity and flexible thinking of these workers is not a luxury, it is a necessity. Businesses don't leave creativity to chance, but are increasingly coining terms like autonomy and self-monitoring at work to develop long-term self-initiated experiences for their workers. They do this in a concerted effort to establish creativity-supporting environments. Memmott argues that creative behaviour means creating ideas leading to adequate solutions to a tricky problem without prefabricated approaches. It is not the stroke of pure genius that defines the creative moment, but the finding of a solution. Why has artificial intelligence been such a hard thing to achieve? Not because computers and robots cannot outprocess and outcalculate humans, but because they can't join up two boxes that apparently have nothing in common. This is where creativity comes into play. We can rehearse every single set play in the game and master every response. But what happens when the ball bounces poorly? Or the defender doesn't go left when she should? Or the wake of the other swimmer shifts the flow of water to our disadvantage? These are things that shouldn't happen, but they do. If players and performers cannot be creative, then they will eventually stumble and fall. Drawing on the work of Florida, Memmott argues, creativity is a basic element of human life, a widely laid out social process which requires cooperation. This is stipulated by human exchange networks. It takes place in actual communities and in real places. In this way, we need to overcome our thinking barriers, break down our routinized ways of training, and abandon the safe and mundane. Only in doing this, and having the nerve to experiment, can we help the young people in our care to be creative. Industry, business, and politics have been slow in acknowledging that we need to take a wider view of creativity and fashion environments conducive to it. Sport and education are two areas where we've been even slower on the uptake. Creative ideas are vital if we are going to help young people to succeed, and yet we need to teach it and not hope to chance that it will find us through our very best players. Practitioner Response by Nathan Horn.
From a practitioner standpoint, it is often easy to focus on the way things should be done or the correct technique for demonstrating a skill. In most cases, in formative and summative assessments, we ask students to display a discrete skill or set of skills in isolation from the context in which they may be used within play. Do we do this because it's the way we were taught during our physical education experience, or simply because it's easy? Is it about the process or the result? In the current professional sporting landscape, results rule over the aesthetic value of play or the process. Think Chelsea against Arsenal. In our physical education classes, are we asking ourselves the same question? Do we want students to simply achieve at a given task, or do we want them to express themselves and enjoy the process of doing so, with the result a byproduct of that expression? How often do we scold the student who finds a hole in the rules of the game and uses it to their advantage, rather than celebrate their creativity? Mehmet argues that creative behaviour means creating ideas leading to adequate solutions to a tricky problem without prefabricated approaches. If we provide students with the drills, the set plays, or instruct them on what to do in certain situations or scenarios, are we allowing them to create ideas, or are we providing them with these prefabricated approaches? In my physical education program, we use an inquiry-based approach to learning. Students are encouraged to be co-creators of knowledge and understanding within physical education. I encourage my students to find creative ways to solve their problems. Rather than going through the same old drills and activities, I design games and activities that place students in situations where they must problem solve, create and innovate, and find alternative ways of finding adequate solutions to tricky problems. If we can allow our students to take a more active role in what our classes and activities look like, we may in turn see the more creative nature of players shine through. Failure is not a bad thing. In fact, it's the best way to learn for both student and teacher. As practitioners, we need to feel comfortable with the lesson not going exactly as we planned. Plan with the end goal in mind and let your students take hold. You may be surprised by their creative approaches to solving the problem.
So in concluding, how does this discussion relate to you, to your experiences? Did it make you think or consider something? I'd love to hear your thoughts and so would others, so please share at www.peprn.com. Thanks for listening and see you next week for the next Pepin podcast, where I'll explore the second chapter of Daniel Mehmet's book. Acknowledgements. I'd like to thank Nathan for his contribution and for taking the time to reflect on this blog. This is an audio version of the Pepin blog that can be found at www.peprn.com. Thank you.